Blog Talk Radio.
Had a great week this week, and well, as always, I hope you have a better weekend to follow. I hope everyone's doing well, and boy, what a board of poetry we have tonight. And hello, Rex.
Hello.
My co-host. How are you tonight?
All right. What's
doing
up?
Doing good?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I'm tired. Nothing unusual there. I only try and report the unusual stuff. yeah, I'm doing pretty good. How's it going with you?
Oh, not too bad. Rain.
Yeah.
Expecting more rain. So.
Oh, yuck. Yuck, yuck, yuck. Yeah, we had a day or so of rain, but it's over now, thank God. And, yeah, so it's, I don't know. It just kind of came and went within a day, and I'm happy to see it go, and you know, I can't say I was happy to see it come, you know, but that's all right. You know, as long as it's passing by, I don't care. You know, once it was over, I was like, oh, God, all this aches and pains for what? For what, I say. But that's the way it happens. So, you know, I want to tell you something. I looked at our board earlier today, and I'm going, where is that poem? How did I miss that poem from last Friday? And I went, And I went in search of that poem, I'm putting air quotes up, from last Friday, and I went, oh, son of a gun. I never moved any of the carryovers to the board. So here I was today adding like 12 poems to the board going, you know, blessing myself, saying, oh, please, dear God, let us have, you know, get through most of them. Oh, it was just too much. I couldn't believe I did it. But I did it. I did it. Yes, I done did it. So yeah, it was an intriguing little piece of. Thank God I didn't delete it because I had it on a notepad. It's a good thing I didn't get rid of it because I wouldn't have had a clue where to begin. You know how that is. Well, maybe you don't. Maybe I'm the only one crazy like that.
Oh, damn.
But, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, that does add quite a chunk of change to the board.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Yeah, I kind of went, oh, shoot. Yep. But only one of them triggered my memory. And I went, so I just went, well, my name's not up there, so I probably didn't move them. And then I'm like, did we have carryovers? I said, did we have carryovers? We had like 12 carryovers, Gene. What are you talking about? And I went, ah, oh, this could be interesting. But it's all right. It's all right. We'll get through them, at least some of them, a lot of them, maybe. I would say most, but it all depends if I shut up and get the party started or if I just sit here and keep talking, right? That makes a difference. Just kidding. Just kidding. But there's a bit of truth to that. And Rex, just so you know, our friend Weaver of Dreams has joined us. Hello, Katie. How are you?
Ah, hello. How lovely to hear you.
Hello.
How lovely to hear you. Hello.
Long time no see, man. I haven't seen you in ages, I think. Yeah,
I think you're right. Yes, I had a little bit. I had a little bit of a blip because I've not been sleeping very well, and it kind of catches up with me, and my brain goes on CON 10 or something.
I get that. Yeah, when you don't sleep well, and all of a sudden it's like crash and burn, and then you got to start over again. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I used
you got
to
it.
Get that. I totally get it. Oh, my goodness. Well, it's good to have you with us tonight. And
thank
it's
you.
Good to have Rex with us tonight. So it's a three
always
of us so
have.
Far, and I think that's a place to start, right? That's the way I feel. And I guess because I added 37 poems to the board today, I guess I should start up and grab some. So I'm going to start with the carryovers from last week that I just added. Yeah, right. I don't know. Don't tell me. I'll probably have a lost moment. But I am going to start with the carryovers that I moved over today, and we will see what happens. And there is Dave. Hello, Dave. Damn it, Dave. No, I'm kidding. I love saying that, though. Okay, here we go. This one here is called Like a Dog That You Are by Dash Pat. So I put that up, and I have an audio for that. Somewhere. Where did it go? There it is. Okay, here we go.
This is Kimberly McNeil. It is 21 October 2022, and I am going to read my poem titled Like the Dog That You Are. The Woods will fill the cabin with snakes. Mother will bring the mud. Your thoughts, like spinning tires, will trap you in a perpetually unfinished, plagiarized poem. The cabin, no longer your subterfuge, will betray you with a permanent coldness, an ache in your lower back that no fire will warm. Pain that will shorten your breaths, causing you to pant like the dog that you are. your breath unnaturally repulsive to birds, deer, and bear, who will never visit cabin again. They remember the sadistic head twisting, the way you killed your cat, the mosquitoes you breed will bite your face at night. Serenade your insomnia with an unrelenting buzz in your hairy, waxen ears. You will be forced to inhabit the tiny outhouse for shelter. There, you will knit putrid strands of fecal mucus, create freshly defecated, filigreed dream catchers to stave off the boredom of your pathetic life. End poem.
Great read, Dash Pat. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is much appreciated. And Kate, why don't we start with your thoughts?
Oh, well, first of all, so good to hear Dash Pat again. Maybe you have, but I haven't heard for an age. So that was lovely. Lovely to see your work on the board as well, Dash Pat. Yes, well, somebody somewhere is having a terrible time. And I think that somebody somewhere deserves it totally. This is an angry, I'll get back at you poem. This is, I'm going to get all this pain out and then I'll read it out. I love it. I love that. It's a great way to get rid of anything that's really bugging you. You just write it down. So I think you've done exactly the right thing. I thought you were describing me for a while there. When you started making the dream catchers. But no, that's not me. Oh, so funny. Yes, I thought this was, yeah, this was a poem. This was epic, and I liked it very much.
Excellent. Thank you, Kate. Now, Jean, how about you?
Well, I have to say, I put this here, painful imagery, and it was quite a rough piece. There is nothing frilly about it, nothing cute, nothing pretty. It was just straight and to the point, and, she definitely didn't like whoever that was, so, good for her for putting it together and reading it out. So, thanks, Dash, for sharing with us.
Nice. Yeah, that thought was the woods and the cabin does conjure up a thought, because you think of that movie, The Cabin in the Woods. There's something evil that lurks within that place, and that's the offering here with this telltale of the evil that oozes from the pores of this individual being talked about. And that offers up that notion of the end of a serial something or other, whether it's a killer or just a gigolo or something along those lines. It kind of points to the end of that which was. Now you will suffer in kind. And those last few lines were particularly odious and quite quite aromatically filled with your fingers will be playing with the shit you've been rolling out with. So have fun at it.
Yeah, definitely, that's for sure. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, I have a feeling Rex is going to say my name next. So I better be on the ready. Why? Oh, I'm seeing things here. Okay, my mind. I keep seeing the same thing over and over and over again. Okay. Rex, I have the next one for you. And this is by Xylophonic Blues. Now I have to do this.
Oh.
Put it over on the board. And whenever you... Oh, sugar, honey. I see. God dang it. That was nice at the same time, right? Paste. Okay. Whenever you're ready, Rex, there we go.
Lar She Blows. The Helmsman by Xylophonic Blues. Pages softened by hand-aged ivory. Hold your weight in quilting revolutions. Glacial grooves scored by time. Invisible bullets of alabaster rays revealing. Black shell rivers breathe in turquoise retrieving. Night eye that blinks out. Masonry rock washed with lime. Opposites ransom the swells hidden, oblong outbursts dressed to scorch, each star a discussion, glints of vacillation in numbered progression, sparking communique, broadcast walking with angels in a 360 reach. Universal conflation is defunct of the figure, fog motionless on the sidelong band, underground blinked, rubies firefly towards Orion's full moon. Language cycled beyond the earth's wind. Bell buoys scuttlebutt painted in the mouth of the storm. Nebulosity drunk up like milk sits and broods alone. Tactile sky, captains chasing auroras crystalline red. Fire touched the seal's concave bone. Manta fragments shadow a trail of kisses. Cold jitters hum and separate the suave off her lips. She clenches her mouth. It's light blue and fluttering, drenched dark, plankton matted her hair to a crown. Neon currents become cautioned wind and surge, universe mending upon the lighthouse helm. The heliotropic incline tunnels across the ocean floor. Headlands waterfront, light steers free. And boom. And Gene, why don't we start with you, please?
You know, I think that this was an excellent story told. And there was wonderful imagery throughout the piece. I was just getting to the point where I was going to go back and, like, kind of look for that wonderful stanza, you know. But there are a lot of well-done stanzas throughout this whole piece. Each one has its own angle on the story, and each one feeds into the last one so well. I think that this is really a great piece, Xylophonic Blues, and I want to thank you for sharing it with us tonight. You know, I like when it started out. Pages softened by hand-aged ivory. Hold your weight in quilting revolutions. Glacial grooves scored by time. Invisible bullets of alabaster, rays revealing. It's a great way to lead into this. And the image kind of pulls that together as well. And I think that it is just really well done. So thank you very much. Thanks for sharing. I hope you share with us more often.
Nice, Jean. Thank you. And Kate, what about you?
Well, my darling, let's have a little look. I think my favorite is Broadcast Walking with Angels in a 360 Reach. Now, that is exactly, is just lovely. That's what the lighthouse is doing. It's you know, 360 and lighting up the sky, which is absolutely wonderful. There's so many fabulous stanzas. But I think all of them just blend together to give you the story of this lighthouse forever doing what it should do out there, no matter what the weather is like, and it's doing its thing. But I thought it was really beautifully written, and I love the way it's done as well. You know, none of these straight lines, and you just read. It's bouncing along, and it's light, and it's bright, and it's like the light. So I thought it was lovely.
Yeah.
Nice. Thank you, Kate. I was drawn to that one, too. It was nice that they dropped it kind of in the middle because it does offer up that note to the 360 view that you get with a lighthouse. As it rolls around, you get glimpses, glacial grooves scored by time, and then that night eye that blinks down. Then you get the fog motionless, bell buoys, tactile sky. Fire touched the seal's concave bone. There's such nice notes of walking along that beam itself, outlining singularity, almost in degrees of its turn. So that was a great way to play out the thought of the lighthouse itself. Excellent piece there, Xylophonic. Thank you very much. And Rebecca, to you.
Okay, well, I'm going to read this one. And this is even short by my standards. Honestly, gosh. This is called Blows by Casey Day. You asked me which way the wind blows, but I couldn't see past the cloud outside my window. And poem.
That is short by your standards.
Yes.
All right, Kate, tell us what you think.
I love it. I'm just looking at the cartoon. Oh, dear. Yes, that is, there's so much. Again, this is it amazes me how somebody can give you everything they want to let you see in so few words. You asked me which way the wind blows, but I couldn't see past the cloud outside my window. Ah, the metaphor or what? Yes, I think that is just concisely wonderful, and I do envy that ability. But I love this. How come you never send me flowers? Because I don't like you. Oh dear. Oh, thank you very much for you brightened up my day, Casey. Thank you.
Well said there. All right, Jean, since you got to read.
Well, you know, I want to make sure that my comment is not longer than the poem. That makes it kind of sad. But my whole response to this is this like not being able to see the forest for the trees? And I thought it was a clever piece. So well done, Casey. Thank you for sharing with us. Mm-hmm.
Well, it is short, sweet, and to the point, and it does match that picture well as far as the thoughts that roll under it.
Yes.
Yeah. How come you never send me flowers? Well, I don't like you, so. And that does paint the picture of the windows being the eyes, the mirrors to the soul, and that question of thought. Yeah, I can't see past it because I'm a little bit clouded in the moment.
Right.
And it's nice to see that Lucy gets dumped on now and then because she's always the one delivering the pokes and jams.
Yes, and all.
Amen. The noise, I say. Okay. Well, Kate, I have the next one for you, ma'am. And this is called November Rain by My Angels 3. So whenever you're ready.
All right. Just give me one moment and I get the little devil up. November Rain. Oh, that's lovely. Right. Winter screams start my day. The sun makes valiant efforts, hurling itself against shortening night toward daybreak. But darkness still owns the world as its shadowland. I'm beginning to shiver. The cold is calling to my bones. Concrete clouds swell with howling rain, threatening downpours of petrichor heaven. Thunder bark like hounds of sickness, seeking to cull and cut me apart. October apparitions glisten in brain condensation. On rusted recollections. Handprints of All Hallows' Eve shenanigans ghost across the window panes. Cellular debris of yesterday's glee, but it's November rain now falling. Emulsifying the last leaves of autumn. Confetti desired melting to mulch. My breath mists the window, and aching velvet fingertips gracefully trace shapes on steamed glass, hearts and kisses that only I and November rain will ever see. I press my lips to the freezing pane and imagine your harsh winter arriving to kiss me back. Winding November embers retain a vague memory of warmth. I retreat and replete. Mother myself in simple things, books, sugar, and natural flames. Lose myself in pillowed thoughts, let the head mess unravel like a ball of yarn. End poem.
Great read, Kate. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, what you think?
Oh, yeah. I thought this was just an excellent piece. I thought it was beautifully penned. And, you know, there was such incredible imagery throughout this whole thing. And the thoughts were so well delivered throughout. And I have to say, I really, the last two stanzas of this, I really loved. My breath missed the window, and aching velvet fingertips gracefully traced shapes on steamed glass, hearts and kisses that only I and November rain will ever see. I press my lips to the freezing pane and imagine your harsh winter arriving to kiss me back. Winding November embers retain a vague memory of warmth. Wow, marbles. I retreat and replete, smother myself in simple things, booked sugar and natural flames, lose myself in pillowed thoughts, let the head mess and ravel like a ball of yarn. I love those two stanzas. I thought they were just so well done. Normally I don't read two back to back like that, but they were just excellent, and I thought it was a wonderful way to tie this piece up at the end. So, great job, and thank you so much, My Angel Story.
All right. Thank you, Jean. All right, Kate, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, I thought that this was beautiful. And I have to apologize, My Angel, for stumbling over the words, but I do apologize, but it does happen occasionally because I'm a bit thick. So don't worry about it. It was beautiful. It's my fault. But I thought this was, as you say, Jean, this is beautiful. And, you know, you're starting to think, oh, my goodness me, this is really getting cold and it's getting, you know, oh, it's not going to be very nice. There's going to be a lot of rain, a lot of thunder, and people are going to be cold and miserable. But then you get those, as you say, that lovely two stanzas. But that last one just reminds you that you can actually enjoy as long as you're comfortable and cozy and you have all the things around you that you require. Winter is not that terrible, or November is not that terrible. So I thought it was lovely. I thought it gave you all the thoughts of cold weather and miserableness, and then gave you a little bit of joy at the end, which I thought was beautifully done.
Nice, Kate. Thank you. And absolutely. I for the thought of November rain and the way that first stanza started, I thought this was going to walk on that note to the passing of days towards death, but it didn't go that way. And there was some great language in here that I thought was placed nicely, hurling itself against a shortening night. You hit on the angle of night shorten, but the use of shortening had me thinking of actual shortening. It's thick. It's emulsive. It sticks. And she rolled around again with that, with concrete cloud that swirled howling rain, and the petrichor heaven and thunder barks like hounds of sickness seeking to cull and cut me apart. So there's a nice thick heaviness to the air itself, which kind of lends itself to the of how it creeps into the bones. And then that October apparitions, glistening brain condensation, that whole stanza pointing out how Halloween was kind of the marked end of the happiness of the year going into that cold clutch of November and going forth past that. And I did like that that last stanza and the use of offering up the double angle with that smother, separating it with parentheses so you can go either way, mother myself in simple things, smother myself in simple things, a sort of taking care of oneself in the moment with those natural order of business, books, sugar, natural flames, and pillow thoughts, just to let the get oneself out of the fog that comes with the heaviness of winter. So, excellent, My Angel. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
All right,
Jean,
back on you.
Okie dokie. Let me see. The next one, Rex, I have for you, and it's by David Meyerhoff, and it's called The Light in the Shadows. So whenever you're ready.
The Light in the Shadows by David Meyerhoff. Shadows fall and darkness looms over a once warm and breezy land. We batten down the hatches and prepare as if for nuclear attack and a barren wasteland. We retrieve the warm cocoa and dig out of the cupboards the mugs that are uniquely suited for this drink. Ample supplies of warming liquor are on hand, and checks are done on the furnace and the roof. We begin to perch our ears towards the attic, listening for any noises of those taking refuge with us in the growing cold. A Martian would think we have never experienced this before, yet we do this every year, each time preparing as if it is our last on this earth. The tough seem to grasp this with better reactions. They welcome the darkness and the cold. They see the upside that can only be had in the winter as bumps to foster their growth. They know deep down that this way of looking at things gives them a leg up over all the others entering spring afterwards. And boom. All right, Kate, it's up to you. What do you think about the light and the shadows?
Well, I like it. I like it a lot. I like the fact that, we have this, we're battening down the hatches. Shadows fall and darkness looms over a once warm and breezy land. It's as if we're actually going to war, you know, with the elements, which I love. We batten down the hatches and prepare as if for nuclear attack on a barren wasteland. So, yeah, we've got all we need to keep us safe and comfortable. We've got our cocoa. And ample supplies of warming liquor. Very good. So yes, it's lovely. It does make me think that these people treat winter as something that's going to do them a lot of harm unless they're very careful, which they're right, it can kill you. But I love the fact that it does sound as though they're waiting for war to be on them and they're going to fight to the last minute. I thought it was beautifully done. I really did enjoy it. As usual, Last Stand is always my favourite, but they know deep down that this way of looking at things gives them a leg up over all the others entering spring afterwards. Just beautiful. So, yes, I really enjoyed it, David. Thank you so much for sharing.
Well said, Ed. Okay, thank you. And Jean, how about you?
Well, I have to say that I agree with Kate in one respect. But I thought this was nice work by David. Nothing like some seasonal preparedness. My two stanzas I chose were, we retrieve the warm cocoa and dig out of the cupboards the mugs that are uniquely suited for this drink. Ample supplies of warming liquor are on hand, and checks are done on the furnace and the roof. I just thought it was just a well-done piece. I mean, you know, you wonder, okay, we're looking at the attic. Did the critters crawl in? Did they find a home? I've been there once, maybe twice. You know, it's warmer in the house than out here. Let's go invade the space. But I thought it was just really nicely done. It was very down-to-earth piece, and I like that about it. So nice work, David, and thank you for sharing with us, as always. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Another look into the realms of cold. This kind of hits on the notion of someone who understands. So you look at that that notion of being farther north, like the Siberian, Siberian steppes or the notes of Alaska, where you actually do take note because of the thought of you check the roof as well as the furnace and make sure that everything is copacetic, and you listen for those little wayward things. Hey, we got a coon living upstairs we might have to get rid of somewhere down the line. And I like the thought of a Martian with things we've never experienced this before, but it's the prep going into the winter months that you should note, because, hey, if you're not prepped, both internally and externally, yeah, well, you know what? That cold invades real hard. Nicely done, Dave. Thank you very much.
All right.
All right, Dave. We're back on you.
Okie dokie. Well, I put this one up for myself, and I'm going to give this a read. And it's called Snow Angel by Amethyst Moonjade. And we start. Snow Angel. A cold Christmas in the air. Flakes piled high where they fall, falling backwards into the snow. Soft powder fills the air. Arms and legs move in synchronization, and a perfect snow angel is revealed. End of poem.
Great read, Jean. I'll tell you what, that is a hell of a picture. It is almost perfect in its concept, not to mention those little ridges where the legs are and the notation to the lines in the wings that curve. So great pick, and the voice that goes with it offers up such a noted touch to childhood once more, something all kids can appreciate, that soft snow falling, going out and making their first angel or their first snowman or just their first damn snowball fight. Nicely done, Amethyst.
Yeah.
And Kate, how about you?
That is one incredibly well-made snow angel. Isn't it? Wow.
Yeah.
You think somebody did it on purpose. I think it's beautiful. I can see them with a little measuring tape going, that wing's a bit too low, up a bit, up a bit. But that's just me. I'm like that. I come, my measuring tape goes everywhere with me. Oh, this is lovely. This is just a lovely reminiscence of what it was like to not even care how cold the snow was. You were going to enjoy it. Even if your fingers were nearly falling off, you're having fun. And that's the beauty of being a child. You don't really think about the discomforts because you're having too much fun. And I think this was just lovely. And thank you so much for sharing it with us.
And it was played well because look at the left at the bottom. You see the footprints going in and then the fall down. And then on the right, you see the footprints going out.
Yes, I saw that. I saw that. I thought I was a bit worried about the second one down on the right. I wasn't very sure what that was, and then I realized it was a footstep. And it was just my eyes playing with me.
And Jean, you got to read it.
Well, you know, I really thought it was a nicely done piece. And there's nothing like the perfection of a snow angel. You know, it's kind of hard to do it without, you know, any trace of getting up. But this one definitely shows no signs. And I think that, you know, when you're a kid and you make a snow angel, it's just kind of like, yeah, look at that. You know, it just gives you that warm feeling inside. Even though it's snow, I get it. But I thought it was just a nicely done piece. And, you know, for being such a brevity, it really, it can add some weight to it. And I like that very much. So, great job. Absolutely. Hey, we have another caller. I think we have Dex on the line. Dex, is that you?
It is. Hopefully everybody's having a wonderful Friday.
Hey, Dex.
To be here.
Hi, Dexter.
Hey, everybody.
Yes, it's good that you are here. I am glad to hear your voice. Now, Rex, do you have to comment on that piece? Or did
yes,
you?
Yes, I did. First off.
I think you started. Okay. I just want to make sure, because I didn't know if you wanted to continue the thought. Now, Dex, did you happen to hear that piece, Snow Angel?
I did not, and I do not like jumping in on people's pieces, so I appreciate the last one, but I'll leave a written comment on it.
No problem. I would just like to ask. I always try and offer that out when I pick someone up. Let me see now. Kate, I have one for you.
Oh, thank you.
It's not too much for you. I know it's very
long. I'll manage.
It's spicy.
Oh, hang on. I'll get a little drink. I'm going to have a tiny little sip of my drink.
Oh, lordy, lordy. Wait till she gets to the last sip of that drink. Woo-hoo!
Oh, it's awfully nice. Hi. A wee tot, Ken. Sorry, that somebody else just came in the room. That wasn't me. Right, crystal eyes. That's lovely, crystal eyes. Ice eyes, frozen glare, depression slowly seeping out, fire, anger, crying again, breaking apart. Walls are broken down, emotions exposed, broken. Crystals falling, glass flowing, eyes misty. Wishing, hoping, it's nothing, I'm fine. All lies. End poem.
Great read, Kate. Thank you very much. And Dex, why don't we get you to comment first and you were the last one in.
Yeah, I loved this piece. And, you know, what it really reminded me of is kind of almost like what it is to wear your emotions on your sleeve. You know, when these people say that, you know, that somebody wears your emotions on their sleeve, it really has a lot to do with their eyes, you know. And I can see that sometimes it is a good thing and sometimes it's obviously a bad thing. And And to be able to peer into your soul and to be able to know you're disgusted and know you're upset. You know, I thought that this rite brought a lot of just thoughts of that feeling. And so I thought that this was an impeccable rite.
Excellent. Thank you, Dad. Gene, how about you?
Well, you know, when I read this and we were going through it, I was like, mm-hmm. Because, you know, so often winter and depression all too often go hand in hand. You know, shorter days, less sunshine, people tend to become sad and depressed. And I think that kind of has a touch of that in here. You know, the cold and... I think that's what I got from it, and I thought it was very well expressed that way. Whether I'm right or not, heaven only knows. I don't know if there is a right or wrong in it. But it was just very well written. It was a brevity, but it was very well expressed. You know, the words were definitely pointed and straight to the thoughts, and I think that was good. So, well done, Fate Nightshade. Enjoyable piece.
Nice. Thank you, Jean. And Kate, how about you?
Well, this is so sad. Now, talking of sad, that stands for seasonal anxiety disorder. Now, isn't that amazing that sad means that? I mean, it's just that crazy that they could get those words out of it. Sad. Anyway, that just by the way. I had a feeling that this was a person. Excuse me, my mouth's very dry, I do apologize. This is a person who isn't willing to show their pain until they get to the point where there's nothing they can do. You know, the walls come falling down. But still, they won't admit there's a problem. Is it pride or is it because they know that the person they're speaking to doesn't really care, so there's not much point in telling them? But I thought it was very sad. I did. I thought it was... Nobody's looking after this poor person. It's just damn shame. And the eyes do show everything. I firmly believe that you're right there, Dex. They do show everything. Windows to the soul, just you know, the you can see. You can tell right away. You look at somebody and you can see. That makes a good actor, by the way. If they can show it in their eyes, they're a good actor. So, yes, this I thought was very sad and beautifully written and a lovely brevity. So thank you so much for sharing.
Nice. Thank you. Since this was all about visuality, I'm going to go with the visual thought that is represented in this piece itself. If you look at the first two lines, for me, that represents the eyelid. The depression slowly seeping out is the eyes squeezed shut because you know what's coming, the fire, the anger, the crying again. That represented right there. And then the whole bottom of this, it walks into a singular teardrop frame with finishing out with I'm fine, all lies. It's not pointed, it's flattened because it's still cruising down the cheek. So the thought of I'm fine, all lies being the admittance to the fact of reality in the moment. But I think the whole thing is visually perspective of how one feels in the moment, the squoze shut eyes and that singular tear rolling down your cheek, and you know what's going on, yet you have no way of controlling that which is churning inside. So, nicely done, Fate Nightshade.
That's a great read on that. Thank you. I'm enjoying listening. No, I learn all the time, you see, so I listen intently. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have jumped in, but I do love to listen when people are telling me what I should be seeing. It's great fun.
Oh, I'm the oddball. I don't mind looking at things differently.
That's what I love, because you and the person that you're with on the show, different ideas, different ways of looking at them, but they're still so interesting. So carry on, sir. You're doing a damn good job.
Oh, my God.
We're coming back to you, Eugene.
Okay. Yeah, there you go. Eugene, where the hell are you? Oh, he's napping or something. Dex, I got the next piece for you. This is called Jamie Gutenberg by Jack Tomkovic. Oh, God, Rex is just snapping a big beer.
All right.
whenever you're ready.
This is Jack Tomjanovich. Jamie Guttenberg as Yanda, gum-sucking, butthead, tacky, mocking. Stale coop staging, outweighing the softening. Shooter, a kid in a cookie jar. Firing at fish in a barrel. Flesh and bone, alive with dead targets. Death penalty, no. Life in prison without parole. Tiny dancer, gymnast, jouster. Inner frame, inner flame, burned out, burned so brightly. On a bonfire sparking, drawing off to the warmth and joy she lived daily. We roasted marshmallows, toasted Jamie with a hot chocolate, sang and danced till the sun came up. End poem.
Great read, Dex. Thank you very much. And Jean, why don't we start with you?
Well, this is, again, with Jack, another well-done Jamie Guttenberg. I'm not familiar with the name, but in the author's notes it says, a combination of court speak and poet speak. Hope you enjoy. Jamie, of course, was killed in a Parkland, Florida mass shooting in 2017. Her father, Fred, is now a gun control activist. So he's got a better memory than I. But definitely gets his point across right from the beginning. You know, has beyond a scum-sucking, butt-headed, tacky, mocking, stale coup staging outweighed the softening schooler, a kid in the cookie jar. What an aggressive way to begin. And it definitely pulls you in and makes you pay attention to the rest of the poem. And I think that in that respect, Jack really accomplished what he set out to do. He got all of our attention in there and, you know, made us all aware. So well done, Jack, and thanks for sharing, as always.
All right. Thank you, Jim. And Kate, how about you?
Oh, this is very well written, gets you deeply into what's going on immediately, because you're looking at those first two stanzas and thinking, okay, this is something quite deep going on here. Then you get to that shooter, kids in a cookie jar firing at fish in a barrel. Oh, that's just so, you can't even begin to imagine it, can you? And the fact that they celebrated her life is something that I find very brave, because, you know, you are not supposed to, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to look miserable. But the fact is they loved this girl, and they sang to her memory and danced till the sun came up. I thought, it's very good. It's a very moving piece of writing. So thank you so much for sharing that and making me cry, Jack.
Thank you, Kate. Dex, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, this was a very powerful piece, and I love it. I love the from a writer's sense on this is like right down my alley on the perspective and the kind of take that he took on this, you know, and on taking and naming it after somebody that was killed in the mass shooting, and bringing to life this really huge issue that we have here presented before us. And, you know, it brings to mind this article that I read, that it was like that people, that maybe we should bring out these autopsy things about these killers and know that what they're really doing. Like in the Las Vegas shooting, most of people that were treated with the wounds were from shrapnel, from bone, because it was shot off of, the bone was shot off of their shoulder at such a velocity, it shot into them as like shrapnel. And there's things like these that need to be mentioned, because there's certain things these kids think that are video games. And so I just think that this is such an incredible piece, and there needs to be more writing upon it, because right now it's just such a shameful and hurtful thing, and it's such a weird topic to talk about because I don't think that people know exactly how the kids are interpreting this, these types of things. Because all of a sudden you see these lists that these kids are thinking about, like, well, what's the kill count and what I need to top? It's like a video game. It's just a very frightening time. I thought that this was an incredible piece, and it brought up a lot of emotion for me.
Excellent comment there, Jack. Thank you very much. I thought Jack handled this properly. He did this in two parts. Did the thought up top with the court and the realization of what went on. And then the last three stanzas kind of walked a different tone. Those, the fifth and the sixth stanzas, Tiny Dancer and In a Bonfire Sparking, that had me thinking about Elton John, and it kind of hit the very same flavor and almost the tune with Tiny Dancer, the song by Elton John, with those two stanzas. And then the finishing out with the roasted marshmallows had me thinking of almost a proper Irish wake, the celebration of that life instead of the heavy mourning that most people go into is a nice note of seeing someone off into the next world, so to speak, but honoring them in the moment rather than being histrionic in their passing. So that was a great way of playing it out, Jack, and well done, Pete. What, Gene, we're back to you.
Okay, Joe. Well, let me see. I'm coming back to you, Rex, with the piece by Robert Pileski, and it's called Sleeping Trees. So whenever you're ready.
Mm-hmm. Sleeping Trees by Robert Pileski. Trees, the poem of winter. The charcoal outlines sketched by a passing artist, the nude poses in the outdoor boudoir. Branches adorned with the snowy clusters of twigs, gnarled and twisted, extend like the very hands of the old man, ready to catch the soft falling flakes, quiver in the bitter wind, sneeze under the snow they carry, sending it raining down, add to a pile of white mucus on the ground. Trees, as they stand silently, sleeping, dreaming of spring, light and lean, warming the season with their bold brown hues, they stand like a song, half sung, unsure of the melody to come. Wait for the wind, breathes once, warm once more. Will they recall the rolling words and unfurl them in green in the sun? Until then, they are mute, forlorn in the wind, sleeping, wrapped in their surgical coats, shiver, standing in the cold wind, groaned under the weight of snow. Life from the land is strangled and stifled in winter's deadly clutch. The space around is hollow as an empty bird's nest in winter barren, vacant. The voices that laughed and cried, gone. No dawn chorus, no symphony, no avian orchestra. The world is entombed in a dome of silence, only fluttery snowflakes glinting like a pulverized diamond dust fill the airy silence. Sparkling winterscape glitters like an angel fire. In the background, blackish green silhouettes and the snowy mountain peaks behind them, every child's Christmas dream and poem.
Dex, why don't we start with you? What'd you think?
I thought this was a fantastic piece. Winter is such a romantic thought and image. Is kind of what it came to my mind, and in this one, to me, it just gave the feeling of a feeling almost in of a family kind of almost in poverty, and I know that it was maybe about a bird or branches or, a few things like this, but it just gave the feel because, you see an empty bird's nest in the winter barren vacant, I just picture so many, you know, I just picture over my lifetime, how many times has that family thought about, or like, how many, looking at these different houses out in the wilderness, and like, God dang it, they got to survive the winter, you know? And so I just thought this was a fantastic piece overall. I thought it could have been taken multiple ways.
Nice. Thank you there, Dex. Gene, how about you?
I thought this was just a really beautiful piece. Incredible imagery, you know, to say the least. I, the imagery, you know, throughout leading us through the winter. It was just beautiful. It really was. And I have to go with, Trees, the poem of winter, the charcoal outlines sketched by a passing artist, the nude posers in the outdoor boudoir, branches adorned with the snowy clusters of twigs, gnarled and twisted, extend like the very hands of the old man, ready to catch the soft falling flakes. Beautiful, beautiful work. And I want to thank you, Robert, for sharing that with us. It was gorgeous and very well done. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Thank you, Gene. All right, Kate, how about you?
Yes, I think this is, as Gene said, just unfurling winter for you. Because it's so true, the land is strangled and stifled in winter's deadly clutch. The space around is hollow as an empty bird nest in winter, barren, vacant. And then you have the way it actually is, because it's so cold out there. There is nobody around to laugh or cry or speak even. So you have just this silence. There's no dawn chorus, no symphonies, no avian orchestra. The world is entombed in a dome of silence. I think that is absolutely beautiful. I really do. It makes winter bearable, because it just tells you exactly what it's hushed and it's quiet. It's white and it's pure. And it's lovely. Sparkling winterscape glitters. I like it. I thought it was wonderful and very well done. Thank you for sharing, Robert.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Kate. This was played out nicely. That opening stanza was a great imageful thought to the picture itself. Charcoal outlines sketched by a passing artist, the nude poses in the outdoor boudoir. That's a touch of flair and something different. Outdoor boudoir, something homey and rich. And then clustered twigs, gnarled and twisted, extend like the very hands of the old man. Another nice play for the artist itself. And I thought the last line that stanza, sending it raining down, adds to a pile of white mucus on the ground, soft, white, moist, and a touch of ugliness in the moment, but still it offers up the beauty within it. And then everything from then on down kind of plays with that angle as well, wrapped in their surgical coats, shivers standing in the cold wind, groan under the weight of snow. Wonderful metaphors in this. And I like the back end of this too. In the background, something you don't see in the picture itself, but something you have to imagine, the blackish-green silhouettes and the snowy mountain peaks behind them, every child's Christmas dream. But it's on that very well Norman Rockwell-esque imagery of happiness and life and the dream, so to speak. Excellent, Robert. Thank you very much. All right, Gene, we're back on you.
Okay, well, let me see now. I think that brings it to me to read. So let me put this one up. And this is called I Sleep Alone at the Curiel by Dammit Dave. I lie alone in bed at night. The moon provides an eerie light. Hang on a second. Let me try it again. I lie alone in bed at night. The moon provides an eerie light, and sadness chills me to the bone as once again I sleep alone. I hold my pillow and I muse how loneliness can fuel the blues. A howling wolf then sets the tone as once again I sleep alone. I tell myself I must be strong, for tears are futile, nights are long. I curse the seeds the fates have sown as once again I sleep alone. Somewhere the gods must hold a key to darkness that imprisons me. The solitude's as cold as stone, as once again I sleep alone. I meditate on my last breath and how I'll hold the hand of death. I know I'll face it on my own as once again I sleep alone. End poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And Kate, why don't we start with you?
Oh, I thought this was absolutely wonderful. Ah, the rhyming is just so smooth. It just, oh, damn it, Dave, you did it again, Dave. Wonderful. And he's on his own too. Oh, that shouldn't happen to such a nice guy. But I thought, I love that repeated. I always love a repeated line. It, you know, you, it makes you comfortable because you know it's going to be there at the end of every stanza. And so you get to be, oh, let's wait for it again, what's going to come up next. And I think it's just brilliant. I love that. Yes. Although I didn't, I'm not so keen on the last stanza for once because it was the end of the story. And that's not good. I wanted more of it. But yes, I think you did a brilliant job. Well done, Dave.
Thank you, Kate. And Dex, how about you?
Yeah, this was an agonizing piece, and I felt like it tried to build up as much strength as it could for the person that like sleeps alone. But it kept the same sentiment that this is a struggle. This is a horror film continually being viewed. This is just a very strong piece and a very well done.
I like that, Dave. Dex, thank you. Gene, how about you?
You know, I thought this piece was sad, but so well penned. You know, he's so wonderful with his rhyming poetry. And his non-rhyming poetry is not too damn bad either. Oh, damn it, Dave, see? Each one of these stanzas really pulls its own weight. Because I was looking at it. I wanted to pull one, but I'm like, I really can't. You know, each one, I like the repeat line. Like Kate had said, I enjoyed that, you know, because it definitely kind of each stanza. Put it all together, you know, but I lie alone in bed at night. The moon provides an eerie light and sadness chills me to the bone as once again I sleep alone. Each one was very well, and I think that the piece itself is just great. So, you know, excellent job, Dave, and thank you for putting it up for tonight. I appreciate that very much.
Nice, Gene. Thank you. Yo, sit down and stop it.
Mm-hmm.
Not you, dog. I got rented in half tonight. I like the steady progression. You got the sadness chills me to the bones, and there's a little notion of being lost. And then a howling wolf then sets the tone. So it progressed a little bit more, that a howling wolf setting the tone kind of hints at something a little more bleaker. And then I curse the seeds, the fates of stone. It gets even a little bit stronger in its depth, pointing out the how the loneliness is affecting one. And then the solitude is cold as stone, the missing of warmth, even the touch of another, so to speak. And then I'll know I'll face it on my own, coming to death. And then there's that idea of understanding this is his lot in life, and he won't have any company until that time comes. So, and that end line all the way through is, once again, I sleep alone, does hit on that note of being an island unto oneself in the moment, because there is nothing, no sign of warmth or any material notice to another touch of humanity around him. So I like that too. Nicely done, Dave. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Okay. Now, the next one. Kate, I have the next one for you. And this is by Hank. It's called Anchor and Winter.
Okay. 1 second. I don't actually have it. I mean, I don't have it yet, but I'm sure. Refresh once more. Appear just by magic. And it has. So good. Okay. Anchor in Winter by Hatz. Winter in the city feels as the days between cars and buildings where all the snowflakes die when they touch the sidewalks. Winter in the mountains in the cabin where the frozen snow crunches underfoot, the wolves and the foxes reflect the moonlight with their eyes at night. Cold, bright days on the horizon, mountain ridges grinding jagged edges, which plunge into the blue sky. The sunbeams dance across the crystal snow. The light reflects on the white plains until my eyes hurt. It's morning. I watch him through the window as he goes to collect wood with a basket, wearing old brown knitted sweater. On the bowl, he splits the logs with his blows, preparing the wood chips to start a fire in the fireplace. His muscles tense and relax in the rhythm of chopping. I love his body. In his embrace, I lose myself. His strong arms, rough palms, hairy chest just enough to tickle my nose. Remembering the night, a shiver runs down my spine, and my womb throbs with lust. The door creaks, his brown eyes smile. I hand him a blue ceramic cup of Malaysian mint tisane tea. A bun cake with cocoa is waiting on the table, but he notices my dilated irises, so he grabs me, lays me over his shoulder like a sack of potatoes, and throws me on the bed. He takes off his sweater, along with his t-shirt. I see the tattooed anchor on his chest, and my nails leave red scratches on the octopus on his left shoulder. 3 weeks after, I went to the tattoo studio. Today, an anchor with his name is tattooed under my left breast, shades of brown and green. End poem.
Great read, Kate. Thank you very much. And Jean, why don't we start with you? You got to unmute first, comment.
Yep, I am. I'm going to unmute me, and I'm going to give you the unmute version because I think that's better. You know, I thought this was, again, nicely penned, and I love the balance between the nature of the piece and the romance, I would say romance of the piece. You know, from being outside and chopping wood straight on into, you know, his arms. So there's a transition, to say the least. Winter in the city feels as the days between cars and buildings where all the snowflakes die when they touch the sidewalk. Winter in the mountains, in the cabin, where the frozen snow crunches underfoot, the wolves and the foxes reflect the moonlight with their eyes at night. You know, it definitely... She holds that balance between the two very well throughout the piece. And, you know, I thought that was great. And I loved her ending there 3 weeks after I went to the tattoo studio. You know, that was a nice way to tie this one up. And I thought it was a nice job. So thank you for sharing that. It's a great piece.
Well said, Jean. Thank you very much. And Dex, how about you?
But Jean captured that really well when she said it was such a romantic, you know, when she touched on the romantic side of this piece. This is a very romanticized piece, and it captures just such a spontaneous and just an eruption from two people. I thought that this was beautiful and sensual and just... Very passionate in its very nature. So very well done.
Excellent. Thank you, Dex. Kate, how about you?
Yes, it's certainly very, very sensual. I did enjoy that. I liked the way it started off. You know, in the city, it's not so nice. It's just winter in the city is just dark and dingy and horrible, where snowflakes go to die. I can understand that. But then we get into the winter and the mountain and the cabin, and that's where we come to life, and everything is bright, cold, but bright. And I love the part where she was remembering the night before how wonderful it was. And then he comes back in, has his cup of tea, but notices that she's not really interested in her bundt cake. And I thought that was just lovely. It was tender. It was delicate. It was, you know, there was nothing about it that would, you know, make you think it's gone too far. It's beautifully written. And I like the fact she got the tattoo as well. I thought that was so cool. So, yes, all together, a lovely, lovely piece of writing. And very interesting. Thank you.
It was. That opening stanza was wonderful, as you said, where all the snowflakes die when they touch the sidewalks. A great touch. And then the transition, right? Winter in the mountains, in the cabin. A great touch of the wolf and foxes reflect the moonlight with their eyes at night. Some great touches to the getting out of the dinginess in the city and actually seeing nature for what it offers, even with all the snow. And I thought this was going to be a full snow piece going all the way through. Because you hit on that, it's morning, watching through the window, go to collect wood, and then sort of the chopping, the chopping end changes the tempo of the piece and points it in a new direction. And then it's, I love his body, hairy chest, enough to tickle my nose. And then the thought, my womb throbs with lust. So already you know it's getting into the central angle of things. And then dropping in little tidbits, Malaysian mint tisane tea, a bundt cake with cocoa is waiting on the table. You said, well, he decided to forego the bundt cake. I guess at that point, he was looking at her bundt cake in that notion of dropping her on his shoulders and then rolling her over to the bed. So that was a great, wonderful piece, delicately done. And the ending was a nice touch as well, adding that tattoo under the left breast, the shades of brown and green, a remembrance, something that you'll always have that little tender touch every time you look in the mirror of a well-spent holiday in the mountains. Nicely done, Hat. All right, Jane, we're coming to you.
Okie doke. First off, I want to welcome Laurent to the show. Better late than never, Laurent. Welcome aboard.
Thank you very much. I was laying in bed at about 9:30, and I said, all right, time to get up because the show is going to start. The next thing I know, the clock is telling me it's 11 o'clock. Whoopee.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, well, the main piece I have up in the book is Jack Is Dead. So, Jack, whenever you are ready, this is called Isolation.
Well, I'm glad that Laurent could join us here this evening. He's always one of my favorites to hear. So, Isolation, Duke of St. Paul, dressed for the moon, a starlit occasion, Sunday's best, surrounded by wilderness, alone for the highs, blinded by emptiness, shadows of life, dreamy echoes that die, melancholy Sawyer in an infinite prison, dressed for a fine linen, dressed in fine linen, hidden where no one will find. End poem.
Great read, Dex. Thank you very much. And Laurent, you were the last one in. You're the first one up.
Thank you very much. I see somebody who is perhaps friendless, somebody who, regardless of how they get ready, and they get ready for any occasion, are alone, blinded, in a melancholy soiree, in an infinite prison. In other words, all dressed up and nowhere to go, perhaps. But definitely a poem of isolation. Well done, because in a brevity, everything is being said is necessary to be said, but no more than that. Nice job.
Thank you.
Nice, Laurent. Thank you. And Kate, how about you?
Oh, well, first of all, I love that picture. That is absolutely beautiful and goes so well with the poetry written. I love that first stanza. I don't know why it's getting me so much, but it is. Dressed for the moon, a starlit occasion, Sunday's best, surrounded by wilderness. Oh, the pathos. Oh, it's beautifully written. Just, oh dear, it makes me sad. A melancholy soiree in an infinite prison, dressed in fine linen, hidden where no one will find. I think that is absolutely beautiful, and it conveys completely what it's like to be alone. And horrible that is, to be alone. Anyway, I thought it was beautifully written, really touched me, and I'm going to keep that one and I'm going to read it again because I think it's beautiful.
Nice. Thank you. Thank you. Jean, how about you?
You know, Dex, I think you did a great job with this brevity. I'm not sure which came first, the chicken or the egg, but I think it really suits the image. So if you found that image afterwards, I'm impressed. But it kind of leads me to believe you wrote to the image. And I think you did a wonderful job with that. You know, it was nicely penned, nicely expressed. I like your intro stanza, dressed for the moon, a starlit occasion, Sunday's best, surrounded by wilderness. It was a melancholy piece for sure. And just well done. You know, great job on it.
Thank you, Jean.
Thank you. Dex, I'm going to go a little different. Because you got that picture up there. I see the man in the moon, something that everybody's been looking at the moon and seen that image, the face itself. So that kind of hits at the notion of peering down on the earth itself. Now, the dress for the moon, a starlit occasion, Sunday's best surrounded by wilderness, I think that's an offering up to the beauty in nature itself, where most are confined to city living. They don't actually get out and understand the beauty that one finds in the wilderness, so to speak. As you hit that on the back, an infinite prison dressed in fine linen, hidden where no one will find. It's because nobody bothers going out to look. The idea of actually looking at and seeing that beauty without the extreme light show in the city, going out where it's dark, where you can actually see the stars and everything else that is lit because of that moon, seeing the beauty in that, and you understand the loneliness in the moment or the isolation of that singularity, which you are not a part of. But incidentally, if you go out and live near there or actually visit, you can be a part of that. So there's no isolation except being in that vast expanse, understanding you might be the only one there at the moment. So nicely done.
Thank you, Rex.
You're welcome. All right, Jean, we're up to you.
I knew I was going to hear my name. I knew it. I'm intuitive like that. Okay, Laurent, I have one for you by Daniel Deschino. So you'd be so kind. Excellent.
Absolutely. This is called Metaphoric Contemplation by Daniel Deschino. There are many days when I feel as if a fallen leaf on a busy street. I grew and bathed in the sunlight of summer, and when the autumn sun called to follow, I should have landed in the grass. My destiny, my legacy, to provide for springtime tree renewal. But on modern ground I lie hard, confusing, and unwelcoming to the roots of existence, the journey I always imagined. My only hope is passing car compassion to pass by with explosive windswept veracity and send me airborne my way to the earth before the rains wash me to the sewers of the world. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Dex, why don't we start with you? What do you think?
To me, this is a classic poem of somebody just living within one's imagination and, in a sense, I guess, dying within one's imagination. You know, almost hoping for a certain death, you know, it almost seems glamorous in a certain sense when you're in your own imagination. So I just said, I always loved Daniel's writes, and I thought that this was fantastic.
Excellent. Thank you, Dex. Kate, how about you?
Oh, yes, I agree. He writes so beautifully. I do like his work. Metaphoric contemplation. Yes, so basically we have someone whose life is preordained, it looks like. You know, he knows what he wants. He knows he wants to grow. He knows he wants to do something different. But life just drops him on the modern ground and leaves him there. And he can't grow. He can't do what he wants to do. So he's imagining doing it. But for some reason or other, he's being stopped. Probably he's too scared to leave something he's used to go and try something different. But I love the... my only hope is passing car compassion to pass by with explosive windswept veracity and send me airborne my way to the earth before the rains wash me to the sewers of the world. Oh, yes, that was good. That was very good. So, yes, I really enjoyed it. Daniel, wonderfully written.
All right. Thank you, Kate. Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, it's kind of looking at this, you know, it's kind of like when you feel that your destiny means for you to go in one direction, but life keeps carrying you in another direction. You know, you just kind of can't seem to get there. I mean, when you feel you're supposed to be in one place and you're not getting there, it's very frustrating. And, you know, it was well written, and I thought it was very cleverly done. You know, I was looking at the last stanza. My only hope is passing Clark compassion to pass by with explosive windswept veracity and send me airborne my way to the earth before the rains wash me to the sewers of the world. So it's just all about chance, you know, and what's gonna actually put you where you belong. I thought it was clever, and it was a really well done piece. So thank you for that, Dan. Enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
As usual, I enjoy Daniel's poetry, and I enjoyed this. The metaphor of being a leaf falling on a busy street and not being comfortable with the idea of decomposing and adding something to the roots of existence, it's very interesting. I like the metaphor, and my only hope is passing car compassion to pass by with explosive windswept veracity. I like that, and I appreciate the last stanza the way that Jean appreciated it. If it's not for the leaf, if not for the car, you're gonna lie there. It's some kind of an external force, an impetus that perhaps will take you. I think Katie said to where he belongs. Nicely done.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. I think that third stanza, those last two lines, confusion and an unwelcoming to the roots of existence. I think that's his play right here. He understood everything early in life. I grew and bathed in the sunlight of summer, and when the autumn sun called to follow, I should have landed in the grass. A note to how things have progressed and changed to the point where he is confused. And it doesn't feel as if he's part of the welcome roots of existence itself. And the back end of this, he still wants a little touch of that which he once felt years before, and they hits on that with the last line, before the rains wash me to the sewers of the world. So that last line reflects again back to the confusion, but he still has a touch of hopefulness in achieving something before that termination of life comes to bear. Nicely done, Daniel. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, we're back on you.
Okay. Well, Rex, I'm coming back to you with this one. This is by Poetic Picasso. So if you would be so kind.
Okay, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, there it is. No One Man, No One Book, Nor One Institution by Poetic Picasso. Intellect is indeed a thing of reverence and decorum, but it is well to remember that nothing that is worth knowing can be taught from a book solely. As for morality, it is mostly the condescending attitude we impose towards people we personally dislike.
we live in a modern epoch, when unnecessary things are fancied and real necessities are forsaken for the illusion of material aspiration. There are moments when one has to choose between living one's own life at its fullest or within the shallow, degrading existence that the world in its hypocrisy demands perfection. Society wants us to believe the good unhappily and bad unhappily, but that is the fiction of a narrative written by the righteous whims of a justifier. In this world, there are only two tragedies known to us. One is not getting what one wants, and the other is getting it at the cost of the suffering of others. The aim of life is to self-identify, to realize one's true nature is to understand that we are each that of which we define ourselves as in our quintessence. Before, books were written by men of great prestige and read by the inquisitive public. Nowadays, books are written by the public and read, regrettably, by nobody. It is only shallow people who require years to attain wisdom. A man who is master of himself can obtain knowledge as easily as he can invent a cause or purpose of which he could proclaim to be the ideal path to his enlightenment. No one man, no one book, nor one institution can be the all of knowledge and wisdom adhered to its ultimate benefit. It is better to be practical and philosophical than to be presumptuous and protracted in one's discourse. For platitudes are a sign of a man's lack of creativity and intellect. To be educated is not the same as being learned. The one is merely the pretension of a parchment, and the other, the application of the mind. End poem. And Kate, why don't we start with you, please?
Certainly. Well, this is a wonderful ode to a wonderful man. Such a clever person. I mean, I would love to be sitting at the feet of this particular person and have him tell me everything he wants to tell me, because I would listen to all of it. Yes. Man that should have been living in this day and age and not the age that he was living in then. But I love... The Poetic Picasso has done a beautiful job of writing as he would write, in the way that they would be speaking when he was writing. And I just think that I couldn't pull one out, because every single stanza has just got something in it that I love. This one. This is the best one. No, it's not. It's all good. Ah, dear. In this world, there are only two tragedies known to us. One is not getting what one wants, and the other is getting it at the cost of the suffering of others. Beautiful. So I think this is a very clever, very tight, very interesting write, and I loved it.
Great. Thank you, Kate. And Laurent, how about you?
I like the line that says, the aim of life is self-identity. To realize one's true nature is to understand that we are each that of which we define ourselves as in our quintessence. I absolutely agree with that, self-identity being the key. If you know who you are, it's hard to go wrong. When one learns from a book and receives the parchment that says, you have learned all that we have to teach you, and now you go on and be yourself. Well, you know, that's one thing, if you have the parchment. But can you apply what you've learned, the application of the mind, or do you simply hold on to that information, that education, and really not know what to do with it? You know, a lot of people graduate from college, and they know nothing of the world. They know a few facts. They can't apply what they've learned. They don't know who they are. They're still looking. I mean, he's a master at finding that key, that internal key to enlightenment, which is so important. But to me, it is the application of the mind. Well done.
Excellent. Well said, Laurent. Thank you. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I think that Frank did a wonderful job. No, not now. Yes, it's here. You know, I think it was a wonderful philosophic piece by Frank, and nicely expressed and well penned. And I thought he did a great job with it. The last two stanzas I totally thought were, you know, they stood out to me. So I thought that was a well done way to tie it up. So I want to thank you, Frank, for sharing with us, as always. And
And Dexter, how about you?
There was many memorable one-liners and facts riddled within this poem. I thought that this was top shelf by Frank, and one that I really, truly loved. So very well done.
Excellent. Great comments, everybody. I like what you said about the that sort of education there, Laurent. It does work that way. And the idea of clarity and discernment being of mind to that last stanza, to be educated, is not the same as being learnt. But one is merely the pretension of a parchment, and the other, the application of the mind. There's such a great note to intelligence does not denote intelligentsia, and likewise, intelligentsia does not denote intelligence. If you cannot voice that which you have learnt in a practical manner, then you are putting out forth what he says here, platitudes that mean absolutely bloody well nothing. So the idea of clarity and discernment of mind, hey, you've got to understand what you've gained in knowledge and how you apply that to life, your life, and it's in working. So nicely done there, Frank. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, we're coming back to you.
Okay. Well, let me see now. I am in such a predicament with all of these poems. Okay. The next one I'm going to put up is by Weaver of Dreams, and it's called Dreamscape. Let me hit that button, because you know we have one. Here we go.
Betwixt above and deep below, therein lies my realm. I float feather light and free in my dreams. My delight when night falls is to drift like a misty wraith, as moonlight guides me on in my dreams. Neither violent storms nor wild winds will affect my delightful dalliance, wrapped in soft silky silver strands in my dreams. Azure sea, lilac sky, my domain, although oft-times a lonely place, hold no fears or surprises for me in my dreams. When I awake, all is pain and despair. Trapped, my screams are locked inside, until I can arise once more and fly in my dreams.
Great read, Kate. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Dex, why don't we start with you, please?
This is a beautiful write. One that is matching of the image, one that is matching of the thought, dreamscape, above and deep below. Therein lies my realm. Just a stunning, almost kick to the metaphorical and intellectual nuts, you know, in a way. I float feather light and free in my dreams. You know, you just say so much in that first stanza. I just thought this piece was stunning. And I always love hearing your reading, and I always love reading your writing. So very well done.
Thank you.
Well said, Dex. And Jean, how about you?
I love this, Kate. I thought it was just a beautiful write. I thought it was beautiful imagery. And I love that you've made sleep a wonderful escape. Just a wonderful piece of work, and I think you did a fabulous job. I could pick any one of these stanzas and compliment it. I guess, you know, I would take that last one, maybe the last two. But they're all wonderful. You know, when I awake, all is pain and despair, trapped in my screams are locked inside until I can arise once more and fly in my dreams. You know, I think I just think you did a great job. So let me put it that way.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jean. Mm-hmm. Laurent, how about you?
I don't think it's any accident that when things are very stressful, a lot of people just want to go to sleep, become unconscious, to escape reality, which is what happens here. But the reality is one thing. Dreamscapes are another, because the escape to sleep doesn't always provide the kind of dreams that are encouraging or restful, et cetera. But in this particular poem, the dreamscape is the desired reality, and the real world is pushed aside. Very effective use of "in my dreams," that phrase, because it makes sense to use it in each and every stanza. Just the way it is, it switches meanings almost. Really a beautiful poem, Katie.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I got to walk that very same tone, because you hit on that sort of nightmares and dreamscapes. Yet the nightmares don't resolve themselves in this, because that last stanza is meant as the separation of church and state, so to speak. You can hold that line during the day, but you do not allow those that imagery and that despair walk into the night, because that is where you know you can go to be outside of all things that bring you pain during the day. So you don't ever take a sad thought before going to sleep. So you're always offered up with something a little more beauteous than that what the coming daylight brings. So it's a great piece, Kate.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Jane, we're about to...
Okay, I'm going to put this next piece up, and this is by Stelina, and it's called A Fading Dream. So let me hit that button. There we go.
I long to hold you in my arms till the early dawn. I long to makes me feel reborn. Thoughts of you, tears spring to my eyes as they stop and realize that you and me were never meant to be. I think of you as I aimlessly walk alone through the park. I still have hope, but I know inside that the truth is stark. Stinging tears, they fall from my eyes, won't accept that our love has died. Yet you and me were never meant to be. Body tears are threatened to fall from this bed. I wanna walk with your hand back in mine by the ocean again. Looking forward, never looking back, need a blessed sign. Oh, that once more we'll make love, baby. Making it real, not just a fading dream. bodies free, making it real, not just a fading dream. Ooh, making it real, not just a fading dream. Ooh, making it real, not just a fading dream.
Wonderful song there, Selena. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is much appreciated. And Katie, why don't we start with you?
Oh, my goodness. That was absolutely wonderful. Oh, I loved it. Well, I want more of that, please, in future. Okay, no, none of the talking. We just want the singing. Because it was bloody marvelous. Ah, so cool. I mean, the way you came in with a little bit of a tune at the beginning, you were kidding me along, thinking that's the way you're going to do it, and then bam, in there. Wow. Yes. I love it. If you make a record, I'll buy it, I swear. Wonderful. Thank you for that.
Excellent, Katie. Thank you. Dex, how about you?
Yeah, I thought that this was absolutely delightful, and I thought there's always a fantastic quality about a person that actually knows how to put together, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's in a $1 million studio or not. Certain people just know how to formulate and put together a fantastic poem and a fantastic song. And Selena is one of them, that she just has a very good knack and a natural knack, a talent for putting together something very meaningful. And I thought that she did that in this piece.
Excellent, Dex. Thank you. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought this was fabulous. Wonderful lyrics. I'm not on mute. That's a good thing. Wonderful lyrics, and I think it was a great collaboration between Selena and Kingsley. And I didn't mention that in the beginning because, of course, I didn't see that part until I got near the end. So shame on me. But a great presentation of the piece. Well done, Selena. I love to hear you sing, you know, and it's always a nice treat. So I appreciate that very much. Well done. Well done.
Excellent. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, who knows if one day Stelina and Medlin won't be Lennon and McCartney. They have a real talent for putting together a piece that is appreciated in text by reading it and by listening to the wonderful voice of Stelina, who expresses in her poem so much of the pain that we all feel at one point or another in our lives, where love is just a fading dream, and there's that wish to recapture, to do it all again, to make love one more time, to feel the tender touch, which makes me feel reborn. Absolutely beautiful SoundCloud, wonderful collaboration.
Great comment, everybody. Thank you very much. And I agree. Those first two stanzas were kind of different. I was expecting something else. But then again, that transition, you walked into the third stanza, kind of opened it up and gave it the whole thing a lot of context and deeper thought. So well done, Selena. You and Kingsley did a great job with this piece. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
All right, Jean, we're back on you.
Okay. And Laurent, this one is for you to read, if you do not mind. Called Spindle.
All right, let me just refresh. No, I don't mind at all. This is called Spindle. Spindle in the closet of fabled story fame, pricked a regal thumb, poor spindle caught the blame. Not the witchcraft or spell, but this poor piece of wood that wound all the thread should be so misunderstood. Black and charred by flame, thrust into a forgotten place, spindle passed out of memory until found by a questing face. A woodworker seeking oak, cherry, or walnut stock rescued the old oak frame, years later solid as a rock, cleaned and sanded smooth, recut to make a child's first chair. Smiling laughter redeemed the wood, no one the wiser or aware. End poems.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Dex, why don't we start with you, please?
Absolutely brilliant, right, on how you kind of personified the wood and also, kind of made us aware of the almost like a drop of rain on its life cycle. It felt like we were a part of this piece of wood's life cycle and almost like we were rooting for it, because that's how important and how extravagant or whatever you want to say, like that's just how important that it really is. You know, this is a piece of life, and you brought that to our attention on this rite, and you're always one of my favorites. So I really love this piece.
Thank you, Dex.
Nice, Dex. Gene, how about you?
Well, you know, I thought this was a nicely penned piece of art. I liked how you recycled that spindle and made it into a chair or something useful and, something that nobody has any kind of standoffishness to. And I thought that was very well done. So nice work, and thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
Nice, Jean. And Kate, what about you?
Well, I love the personification of inanimate objects. It's one of my favorite things to play with. So I really delighted in this. It was so well done. I mean, basically, anybody who's done something really bad, stick them in a closet for a while and people forget how bad they were. I think that's brilliant. I love the way you've done this. The woodworker finding a lovely piece of wood and using it, not knowing, not caring what it was before, but making it to something that is beautiful and useful and for a little child. Yes, very clever and very well written, and I loved it a lot. Thank you.
Thank you, Katie.
Great comments, everybody. I like the larger metaphor you've gotten this along, the sort of that which has been buried in a closet, in the attic, or something put away from many, many years ago and hasn't seen the light of day, that book, that toy, that something from childhood that you now wish to pass on to the next child in the realm, even if you have to redo it a little bit. It doesn't matter. Retell the story, sand down the toy, repaint, whatever. It's taking that piece of history and extending it forward so that they can re-then extend it a little further forward in their family.
Thank you, my friend.
You're welcome. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Okay. Katie, can I get you to read the next piece for me?
Yes, I'd love to. Make myself useful.
Okay, this is called Tied in Knots by A.R. Mundell. There we go.
Just give me a moment because I've refreshed and everything's gone haywire. Oh, yeah, tied in knots. I got it. No panic. We're all right. Like tied in knots. Oh, wow. Suffocating both symbol and fabric, he ties it with shaky fingers, feeling as though the sleek nylon were a serpent inflicting venomous teeth, venom, or the deathly horror of an inescapable door closing, wrapped tight around his fingers, like tying his neck in a bow of rusty nails, freely displaying that he doesn't belong there. The images of faces he dreads meeting. Fake smiles greeting his own, plastered to his face like grout. He wishes he could avoid it and live another day away from that world. Tucked away from the burdens of a restless crowd, he gazes at the noose tied fashionably about him, like a collar to parade him around by. He thinks he's being dramatic, knows so, but this feeling of dread won't leave, like a funeral march, which he must dress himself for, the clothes he'll be buried in, smothered by insincere grins and shallow compliments, all shoveled atop his body to fill his shallow grave. He doesn't know why the bow tie is so heinous to him, only that he wishes to unpick it by its scorpion tail and fling it across the room, hear it crunch against the window, whilst he runs to safety and away from all it represents. End poem.
Great read, Kate. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, I see a poem about conventionality and not wanting to be the way everyone else is or the way everyone else thinks, despite, you know, looking good, smothered by insincere grins and shallow compliments, all shoveled atop his body to fill his shallow grave. That bow tie is indeed to him a scorpion. It represents the dreaded sting of fake smiles greeting his own, plastered to his face like grout, which is a wonderful image. He doesn't belong in that world. It's something else that he wants, something else that he needs. And that thing is a safety, whilst he runs to safety and away from all it represents. This is well done, and I appreciate the AN where he talks about the random thing generator, where he resolved to make a metaphor between two of the five things shown, and two of them were a bow tie and a rusty nail. It's nice to see the thought process evolve into such a wonderful piece.
Nice. Thank you, Laurent. Jean, how about you?
Can you come back to me, Rex? Sorry.
Sure. Dex, what do you think?
You know, I thought this was a fantastic write, you know, as Laurent had kind of said, and, you know, just into that conventionalness. And, you know, it's kind of damned if you do, if you damned if you don't kind of piece. It's like right walking the lines of it, because how many times do you see a family that's like, you know, got a GoFundMe or something along those lines, and they're, you know, they can't even pay for it, but then they have this extravagant funeral and stuff. And it's kind of like you don't really ever want to touch on that, because it all depends on what it is for them. But at the same time, what do you want it to mean for you when you die, you know? And so this just brings up a kind of, I would imagine, almost an age-old tale of what happens, you know, and I just thought this was a fantastic write.
Thank you, Dex. Kate, how about you?
Oh, sorry. I apologize. I was away.
That's all right.
I'm unmuted now. So, yes. I think this, there's so much in this. Somebody who is very upset about themselves, that they it's just all of it is so serpents with venomous teeth and rusty nails lying around his neck, and he's not a happy person at all, which is awful. And he also knows that the people around him don't really care for him that much either. You know, they're just big fake smiles and laughing at him behind his back. Oh, I thought that was it's very deep and very meaningful. If it wasn't so sad, I'd say wonderfully done. But so I'll just say it's sad, and I'm glad that you shared it with us, because it gives me something to think about.
Nice, Kate. Thank you. Jean, how about you?
Well, I have to say that I thought this was a well-written piece. There's an intriguing concept between the bow tie and a rusty nail. I see in the author's notes that she kind of found that together, and that's where it came to be, as well as the references to a noose. It seems there's an element of restriction here, and it's that needing to break out of it or get away from it. That's kind of where my brain went with it, and I think that it was just a well-written piece, and Amy, I think you did a great job,
Oh, absolutely. This was a wonderful piece. And Amy did work some great magic with it. I thought that, Tucked away from the burdens of a restless crowd. Like things far from the madding crowd, that difference between the elitist angle, the staid stiffness of upper society, where one is actually more or less that rusty nail on the edge of that society, the rustic angle. Who knows what appeals to them rather than the haughty accoutrements of dressing up and finery. That doesn't appeal. And he's kind of cursing himself for having to actually be there and knowing that he doesn't fit in and will probably be the butt of conversation for the rest of the evening. And that is what's bothering him quite well. And the thought of running to safety away from all it represents is that angle of knowing where he stands in life and not having a problem with that that life at all, knowing who he is and what he is. Great piece, Amy. Thank you very much. All right, Gene, I guess we're coming back to you for... And
yeah, I guess we're going to say goodnight. I have plenty of carryovers. Plenty of carryovers. And that's just what I'm going to do, carry them over. Most likely, if you didn't hear your piece tonight, it will be played next Friday. I have, I guess, maybe 10 or 12 minutes. Imagine that, Rich. But I want to thank everyone who called in and shared their voice, shared their time, shared their poetry. Much appreciated, as always. Definitely wonderful poetry tonight. And, yeah, that's the fun of Fridays, is it's all over the place. We're not all going in any one direction at any given time. So thank you, Rex, as always, for co-hosting with me. Thanks, Katie, for calling in and hanging out. Thank you, Dexter, for calling in. Thank you, Laurent. Thank you, everyone, for hanging on the board. I know I saw Amy. I know I saw Poeta de Cabra. I know I saw Selena and Alice McCarver. And I'm not sure. I may have missed somebody, so forgive me if I did. It wasn't intentional. Oh, and Robbie. So I hope you all have a wonderful night, a great weekend, and we will see you all soon. And don't forget, after midnight tonight, 12:30, with Aphasiana and Babbler for Part Sinner, Part Saint. Thanks, everybody. Have a great night.
Thank you, Gina. Thank you, everybody. Good night, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, Laurent. Oh, where's the lady saying, thank you for using Blog Radio. Come on.